Come, walk down the winding path. Don't mind the spooks and monsters. They stay hidden within the trees. There are mysteries in this world that you need to know, and paranormal truths that need to be told. Come, step up into the caravan, where we share tales of old as well as new accounts about things you thought only existed in your nightmares.
So this will be the last pre-season episode. Yes.
Yes, it went by really fast. It's hard to believe. And it just makes me that much more excited for the actual season in October. Like, I'm just, yeah, I can't wait.
I'm super excited. And I'm really glad that Steve was willing to come back and talk with us again.
Yes, yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, we love you so much.
Oh, thank you. I love you guys too.
So this is also not only the last episode for the pre-season episodes, but it's a follow-up to the episode from last week.
Mm-hmm. Where wait to hear stories.
Yeah, we talked about cursed objects. We were hoping that Steve would have some stories as well to share about cursed objects, haunted objects.
Nope, not a one.
Not a one.
I love it.
I've got a few.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't believe you.
I've been found out.
Now, if I remember correctly, didn't you tell me that there's this troll bridge near where you live?
Yeah, that's here. It's in Columbia County. And I've got a video about it on my channel. It's an old, no longer used railroad trestle that goes over a little windy mountain road. And the local legends, years ago, some lady put a troll on it. She had to go that way to take her kids to school, and she'd put a troll doll on there to give them something to watch for in the mornings, just a bit of fun. And then I guess other people or somebody started putting more troll dolls on there. And these are the ones like from the 60s, I think, or the 70s, the little ones with the bug eyes and the spiky colored hair. They still make kind of a version of them. There was one in the news lately that does something it wasn't supposed to do. It had a button that made it say and do some things that you wouldn't expect. But anyway. And these trolls just kept showing up and kind of ebbs and flows. Sometimes there may be only 30 or 40 on there. Other times there may be 100 or more of them there. Some of them are way up in the trestle, and it's probably 20, 30 feet high. And the only way you can get up there is either to climb up from the ground or climb down from the top, if the ones way up in the crosswork there. But, there's other spooky legends about it that people going through there at night, and it is a scary place. It's in the dense woods. There's not any houses or anything around there, but people have heard like children giggling and things like that, whispering. And there was another local lady that had stopped one day just to look at it, and she saw a troll doll that she liked. So she's just like, well, you know, it's out here on the bridge, nobody cares. She took it, and as soon as she got it into her house, she started having all these strange things happen. She lived alone, didn't have any pets or anything. And she would hear like little tiny footsteps at night, hear the giggling, and the doll would move. She would find it in different rooms, or if she put it up on the shelf, it would be sitting in a chair the next morning and things like that. And she got really, really spooked and took it and put it back. And that ceased the strange phenomena. So you can take dolls and leave them there. And it's also good luck if you find any that have fallen to put them back up on the trestle. You don't have to climb up just as high as you can reach. That's good luck. But if you take one, it's bad luck. It's like there's certain places in Hawaii where you're not supposed to take rocks and things. Mm-hmm. Bellwitch Cave, which we've talked about extensively. That's, I know you have a good story about that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We touched upon that a little bit in the last episode. There's, you know, people aren't supposed to take rocks, but they do. And there was a, of course, when you go to the cave, there are letters in the gift shop that you, where you wait before you can get on the tour of the cave. Letters going back to from the 90s of people saying that they took a rock and they mailed it back and please put it back in the cave because my life's falling apart. And then they have dolls there that you can buy as well that the owner paints up. And I talked about Sasha last week as well. And Sasha's the name my daughter gave the doll that we took. And actually, the Small Town Monsters crew is down there at as of this recording. They'll be home by the time this comes out. But they're down there filming for Mark of the Bell Witch that'll be coming out in December. And I made arrangements for them to bring me another doll from the cave.
Told them to get you a rock.
No. See,
the bad luck would be on them. So they wouldn't know. Bring me back a rock.
Oh, no. They're completely aware of it. A little bit, I don't know. I don't think they were expecting it, but when they saw the picture before that she arrived in their custody there, Seth was like, "What are you doing to me? Why are you?" So I guess her name is Blair. We've already decided Blair the witch. I have been informed that she is only permitted to sleep in the car. He's not bringing her in to wherever they're staying. I think she's getting cold at night, but I guess he'll find out if she's upset with him. I'll hear about it later.
The car will be running with the heat on.
Maybe, but my friend that that got the doll for me, she works at the cave down there, and she was coming in for an interview, and so that's how they were able to meet up. And she picked the doll up on Wednesday, I believe. So kept her overnight. The doll freaked out her whole family, her husband, her children. They were all terrified.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the next morning she sends me a message. So the morning before she goes to talk with Seth and the rest of the crew, she sends me a message and says that while she was getting ready, she felt like her dog was pawing at the back of her leg. And when she turned around, there was no dog. The dog was actually asleep in the other room. There's nothing. And that's never happened to her before. So it was only a few hours later that she was in Seth's possession. So I guess I'll find out later if anything happened beyond that, but
yeah, keep us posted. I didn't want to hear about that.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. Oh goodness, you know, all the doll talk. It reminds
send
me
one
of
to Anne too.
Yeah.
Well, there's actually an island of dolls down in Mexico that's supposed to be really haunted. There was a show. It's called Mindseed TV. On YouTube, and they went down there and investigated it, and it was pretty intense apparently. So another place that we need to travel to.
Do you know the origin on that or anything, how it became an island of dolls, or did they just show up there en masse? Or
I think the story was there was something about a man who he might have tried to save somebody and she had a doll. And I'm not sure, but there was like an original doll, the original doll. And they go through it on that episode. And I guess that one is like inside of a shack or his house or something like that. And then I think to appease the original doll, he kept hanging more dolls from the trees on the island. And it got way out of hand.
So I remember them covering this on Ghost Adventures. You know, one of those shows on Ghost Adventures. Mm-hmm. It's one of the ones that the kids have watched it repeatedly because it involves spooky dolls. But it is a situation where this guy lived on an island, and I think he started to possibly put the dolls up initially as a spirit type protection. But there's a story about a young girl drowning, And the dolls then, he just right. accumulated dolls to kind of, I guess, appease her, I believe. Yeah, okay, so if you go to Wikipedia, everybody's favorite site, they say that there would be something about the girl wanted dolls. And so, you know, I want my doll. And they just add more dolls. And I think now I would assume that anybody that goes there, you should probably bring a doll, right?
Take a sack.
That, for sure. Don't take one, but bring one. I would think that would be fun.
I saw that episode of Ghost Adventures, and wasn't there one that like it either spoke or the little talk box that they have, or opened its eyes or did something. I remember they were filming it, and it did something and scared me. I don't remember exactly what happened.
Yeah, that it made a noise, and there weren't any batteries in it, I believe, when they checked it. So it shouldn't have been able to make a noise.
I remember that happened before. I had a Furby that was my daughter's that it had been in the closet for years. And I heard it one night in the closet making the little Furby noises. I don't see how it's doing it. Those batteries bound to be dead by now. So I opened up the closet and it's sitting there with its eyes open. I took it out and went to take the batteries out of it, and there were no batteries in it. But I know I heard the thing. It's just for a few seconds, but then if you've ever heard the Furbish, it's very recognizable.
Yeah.
It
is. I have that. I have a Furby here. It doesn't work anymore. It was one that I had, and then I have another one that looks like Gizmo. It was a special, like a limited thing they did. It looks like little Gizmo. He's cute, but he's a Furby, and they look kind of creepy anyway. The Furbies did. Right. So I definitely don't want just randomly talking. That would not be good.
Yeah, another thing too is music boxes. I mean, now as an adult, of course, I understand that the mechanisms inside can eventually kind of move, and then it starts the music and the ballerina dances or whatever. But as a kid, when that would go off just randomly, it terrified me, and I would just freeze, and I'd be staring at it. I swore up and down it was a ghost.
Had one that had belonged to my grandmother that was given to me after she died, and sometimes it would do that. It would randomly just play two or three notes, and I finally took the little piece of metal out of it that makes the notes, so it couldn't do that because it was quite disturbing. And I mean, I never wound it up or anything. It just sat on the shelf in my bedroom, but it would occasionally ding, ding, two or three notes. It was Laura's theme was the music that was on, and I can't remember what movie that's from. I'd have to look it up, but it was a recognizable tune, but it would play three or four notes, and I never wound it up, didn't mess with it, didn't touch it, and it would just occasionally, but it was because my grandma was kind of spooky anyway, so
wow.
Now, there was one, since we're on the topic of like music boxes and dolls and things, there was one doll that we didn't discuss last week, and I don't know how she slipped my mind, but Annabelle. We didn't discuss Annabelle.
It's in the glass box. Do not open under any circumstance.
Right.
You know what? I'm going to be honest here, and maybe this will surprise everyone, but I don't know if it's just because I have a personal fear of dolls, but I honestly, I do not know anything about Annabelle.
Oh, well, Annabelle was found by, she was given to the, why'd they just slip my mind? Steve, what are their names?
The Warrens, Ed and Lorraine.
Ed and Lorraine, Lauren, right. Or Warren, Right. I don't know why I forgot them, but yeah, she is like Raggedy Ann. She's a Raggedy Ann doll, and she's in a case. Like Steve said, there's a sign on there, but absolutely do not open. And then I think it's similar to Robert the doll in that you're not supposed to take pictures either, right?
Yeah, unless you ask him if you can take his picture.
Right. So I think the same thing goes for Annabelle, that you're not supposed to do that. And obviously don't open the glass case or touch or anything. But there were movies that came out about Annabelle, but the Hollywood version of Annabelle looks creepier, I think, yeah. Because Raggedy Ann doesn't look terrifying. Yeah.
But she can be terrifying. I've got a little story here. It's kind of mean, but it's funny. A friend of mine from childhood had come to visit me for a while in Portland, and she's grown. She's actually a couple years older than I am, but she has this thing that she's got this big Raggedy Ann doll that goes everywhere with her, and she's traveled all over the world. But she considers that lucky for some reason, and she has to have it with her. Well, she'd brought it with her, and she left it in the spare bedroom. She was out doing something, and I put fishing line on it and tied it to the doorknob and ran it up over the light fixture. So she opens the door to go in the bedroom, and she sees this Raggedy Ann doll slide up from behind bed and peeking over them. And she screamed and threatened to give me grievous bodily harm because her lucky doll, and I used it to scare her with. But there is something creepy about any doll, I think, under the right circumstances.
So yeah, well, then I'm pretty sure that what I've established here then is when I come out to Oregon to visit everybody, that I stay with Jen for sure. And I just come visit you. So I can ensure that there's no dolls that randomly move.
I'm not going to make any promises. There's an antique shop there in Selwood. Just I know Jen's father used to have a shop down there.
Yeah,
just down the street from the corner where that was, it's Blue Kangaroo Roasters. Now, there was an antique store there that had some dolls in the window. And I swear I was coming through there really late one night. Everything was closed. And I had walked past it. I was going to, I think, 7-Eleven or something. And there was a doll sitting there, and it was looking one direction. And it was one of these old, wasn't porcelain. It was probably bisque or celluloid or something like that, that the head was made out of. But it was cracked. I think one eye was missing. It was kind of scary looking anyway. And I swear, when I came back through, the head had turned and it was looking another direction. And there was nobody in that shop, because I would stop down there sometimes and just window gaze. And you couldn't pay me to take that one home. It had a creepy vibe even through the glass just looking at it. But it confirmed it that night by looking a different direction. I didn't see it move, but there was nobody in the shop. Shop was dark. It was like after midnight. And I was looking to the left or to the right. It's right when I went by. And then it was looking, it was like looking the direction that I was going each time that I went by it. So I'm like, nope.
Go ahead, Jen. Well, was just going to say, you know, it's so interesting because you have all these stories about haunted dolls, but why not teddy bears or stuffed dogs or cats?
That can happen too. I know a lady that was almost attacked by a teddy bear. It was standing in the doorway shaking its fists at her. But there was something with it, some kind of a shadow person, or she described it as a demon with no face. Just nothing black there. And I have a sock monkey that was given to me years and years ago by someone. And I think it came out of Goodwill or something, so I don't know its pedigree. But it moves. I swear, sometimes it will move around. I've found it different places. It's up on a shelf where Mulder can't get to it. Mulder's my little dog, because he would tear it to pieces. But I've come in and found him staring at it and growling and barking before, but it'll move around.
Wow.
Not a lot. I mean, it doesn't get up and run around or anything, but it'll change position when I haven't touched it. And there's nobody else here to touch it. And looks like the dog can't reach it. So.
Wow.
I was really hoping the sock monkey would get brought up. I remember that story.
His name is Mr. Peepers.
I love it.
And he whispered that to me one night after I first got him.
There you go. See?
Wow, that's great.
And you listened, and that's probably why he isn't up terrorizing you.
Yeah, he likes to watch my wallet. It's when I'm getting ready to go to bed or whatever, and I'm emptying out my pockets, I put my wallet over there, and I have to tell him that I love him and that he's doing a good job. And if I don't do that, and if I don't put my wallet over there, then he gets offended.
Wow.
I love it. I love it. Oh, I wanted to. I've
probably had it 15 years or so, but it was used when I got it, so no idea where it came from or any backstory on it. It just, it doesn't really look that scary, but I don't know, if I get up in the middle of the night and there's no lights on or anything and I kind of see it over there, it's like, I know it's watching me.
So I wanted to ask you about something that I read in My Strange World about a mirror, this ornately carved
mirror.
That
was one of the strangest things that ever happened to me, and I didn't even realize it at the time. I was at an antique shop with my mom and dad. I have an idea which one it was. It's long gone. They were antique dealers, and they had a booth in a couple different places, and they would go. They had friends that had antique shops and antique malls and things like that, so we went everywhere. But there was this one, and it was an antique mall and an auction house, and I think this was something that was going to be up for auction because it was over on the other side from where the booths were. But I was kind of prowling around back there. They were talking to the owners. They were big friends, and I'd gotten a Coke out of the Coke machine, and I was just kind of wandering around looking at all the stuff that was going to be in the next auction, and there was this huge mirror. It was probably, well, it was on a vanity type thing, but from the floor to the ceiling, the whole thing was probably 8 feet tall, with the mirror probably being at least half of that. And as I walked by it, it just kind of caught my eye, and I looked in the mirror. And just as I happened to look in the mirror, I took a drink of my soda. But instead of seeing a reflection, it was like being on a video camera or something. It was like if I raised my right arm, the reflection didn't raise its left arm, it raised the right arm, like the opposite one.
Oh.
So I was like, yeah, this is cool. You know, I didn't know such a thing existed. I can see what I look like to other people. So I'm standing in front of the mirror and I'm making faces, I'm waving, I'm taking a drink, you know, like I'm in a commercial or something. I'm like, this is really neat. And they called me to leave, and we left, and that was the last time I ever saw the mirror. And I didn't find out until years after, mirrors can't do that. I thought it was some sort of, you know, like the way it was made, because I know there's different types of mirrors. There's convex and concave and all that. But from what I recall, it was just flat, and the silvering was coming off of it in places. It had black blotches and things on there, but it was a really dark wood, probably ebony or something like that. And it was very ornately carved. It looked very Victorian, very Gothic looking. I'd love to have it now. But yeah, the thing, I said that to this day, I can't explain it. And I know what I saw because I stood there for 5 or 10 minutes playing, you know, in front of it, because I was liking being able to see what I look like to other people instead of a usual reflection. So no clue on that one, but somewhere somebody's got an ornate mirror that shows things the other way around.
That's fascinating. And I wonder how, like, my curiosity is, did it continue to do that? Or
yeah, that was my thought. Something, did it just do it that time, or was it,
right,
you know, the planets aligned or Stonehenge or something, you know, and it just happened? I had a painting that of an old building. It looked like a castle or something. And it was, all the windows were dark except for one little window up in the tower. And I remember my cousins and I used to talk about, you know, we'd make up stories of who was in the tower and why there was a light on and stuff. And then one time I went over there and the little window was dark. I mean, I climbed up on the couch arm and looked at it, and it was like it hadn't been painted over. It was, you know, had the cracula and everything of the original paint. And I thought, yeah, well, that's weird. And then the next time I was there, the light was on again. And then I read later on, I think it was in one of Frank Edwards' books, about a similar painting and almost the exact same circumstances. The kids would gather around and look at it and try to make up a story about why the light was on. And then one day it was off, and they asked I think it was their uncle that had it. And he's like, well, no, nobody's messed with it. And he knew that there was usually a light on in there. And he cleaned it, I think like the next day or something, he was going to check it out. Well, the next day the light's back in the tower. Nobody's messed with the paint or anything. And he was cleaning around the edge of it where it was in the frame. And there was an inscription, I believe it was in Latin, and it said something like, every once a century it shall be dark or something like that. Now, I don't remember seeing anything on my aunt's painting, but that makes you think. It was just almost exactly as described as what I had experienced, and that book was written I think Frank Edwards wrote that probably like back in the 50s or something. So it was at least, his story was at least 10 years before what I experienced, but I didn't read it until like 10 years after my experience. So wow. Was that some kind of curse, or why would it have it in Latin? And, you know, once a century, it shall be dark. What? You know, that's just creepy. I love stuff like that. I love cursed paintings. There's several of those, like The Agonized Man. I don't know if you've ever seen that one.
Yeah. Doesn't he have his hands on each side of his face? Or no, that's The Screamer.
That's The Scream by Munch. Now, this guy, he looks like she's holding it up. He looks like a burn victim.
Oof.
And that one's cursed. And then there's another one with a little boy and girl standing outside a place. I can't think of the name of that one. That one, they found it to be the only thing left in houses that were absolutely burned to the ground. That was more in Britain, I think.
It would survive the fires.
Popular in the 60s in Britain, and a lot of people had it in their homes.
Wow. Was there a poem written by, or maybe it was a story written by Edgar Allan Poe, something about how there was a man, he was a painter, and he wanted to paint his wife. And as he painted her, the life went right out of her. And by the time he was done with the painting, she died.
Oh, sounds familiar, but I like it. The other painting is the hand resist him. And it's a couple of creepy looking kids. I think one of them's a doll standing outside. Mm-hmm. That one's supposed to be haunted. And that guy's actually painted more paintings in that series, even after the one is supposed to be cursed or whatever. But who knows? With the crying boy, it was the rumor was that the painter had abused or beat the boy to make him cry, so he would, you know, be able to capture the true look of what he looked like if he was crying.
Oh, I don't like that. And the oval portrait is it's Poe, absolutely.
Perfect, yeah.
And I was doing some research. There was another doll that I found that I'd never heard of called Leta, the gypsy doll. Have either of you ever heard of that one?
No.
Leta was actually a boy, and this man had handcrafted a doll for his son. The boy was playing with the doll and drowned. Some man in a pond or a stream or something, and somehow, supposedly, his spirit was trapped inside the doll. And the man would try to give the doll away, and people would bring it back. And if you look at a picture of the doll, it looks absolutely evil. Mm-hmm. I think maybe the doll drowned him.
Jeez. That's
it's Leta, L-E-T-T-A. Leta's a doll. Or actually, Leta's doll or Leta. The son was named Leta, but I think the doll was named Leta as well. That's the same with Robert, the doll. The boy that owned it was Robert, and is there maid or something that made that for him?
Right.
Or brought it
sounds
from
like you never want to name a doll after you.
Yeah.
No? Wait, so don't mail you a doll that's named Jen. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, no thanks. Or Anne, Lady Anne, nothing. We're good.
Okay. All right, so no Christmas. Man. No Christmas gifts like that. Noted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just looked up Leta the doll.
Did you see the picture of it there?
Yeah.
It looks evil.
Can you see?
Jen? Oh, goodness. Gosh, see, that makes me think of puppets. And puppets, are more scary than dolls.
Do you know where the Portland Puppet Museum is there in Selwood, Anne?
Yeah.
It's haunted. My daughter was what did she do there? She was she gave like the tours, and then she helped with the puppet performances too. She was like a puppeteer in training. And those guys that own that place, they've got some amazing stories. And particularly some of the puppets that they have from the Middle East, some of the stuff from like, I think it was like Turkey or somewhere like that from like the 17 or 1800s. He said those things are just, he's like, I want to leave them under lock and key. And then their overflow storage for the museum is like in the basement. And he said they've got, they call them walkers. He's like, we got some walkers down there. He said, I hear them down there sometimes at night. So they live next door, but the houses are joined together and they can hear them through the wall. He said, it sounds like they're having a party down there sometime. And they'll go in the basement and the puppets will be either moved around or thrown all over the place.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of weird stuff like that there in Selwood. There's another place called the Selwood Playhouse. And it's been everything. It's been an orphan's home. It was a nursery. It's been a church. It's a theater now. And there's a group in there called Wolfpack. And it's like teenage girls that are considered at risk or something like that, and they provide them with a safe place to go, and they have an outlet and stuff. And then every year around Halloween, they put on a haunted thing there, and they tour you through the place and tell you some of the stories about people seeing small children running around inside, I guess, like from when it was an orphanage or whatever, because there's no small children there. That place has got very eerie feeling to it. Just walking by outside, I'd already got some vibes off of it before I even knew what it was. But yeah, that'll be open around Halloween. You should definitely go check that out.
Yeah, definitely. Wow.
I need to just get out there to see.
Yeah, you do. Come on over.
Portland, just in general, has a lot of things. I mean, there's Shanghai Tunnels and Cathedral Park and the Piddock Mansion. And I go on and on and on. There's a couple of cemeteries. I think it's at Pioneer Cemetery, one of those that has some walkers.
Yeah, I used to know somebody who did I think it was Untimely Departure Tours. And I think where, you know, they had untimely deaths and they would dress up in period clothing and do the tours during, you know, the Halloween season, and definitely something that I've wanted to go check out, and I haven't done it yet.
And there's a walking tour downtown. I don't know if they're doing that anymore or not with all that's going on downtown right now, but I sort of weaseled my way into the tour group one time. I walked along with them for a few blocks and listened to the guy talk about some of the buildings. But there's a lot of places down there. Portland was just rough and rowdy, particularly back in the 1800s. Downtown, it was all like bars and brothels and things like that. In fact, there at the pizza place that's above the Shanghai Tunnels, there's a shaft, an elevator shaft or something there, that a prostitute was thrown down and killed, and she's one of the ghosts that haunt that place.
Wow.
What did you say the name of that theater was again? Sorry.
Name of what?
That theater that you were talking about?
The Selwood Playhouse.
It sounded familiar. I wanted to...
Yeah, if you type in Selwood Playhouse Haunted, I think it'll... There was an article from the Portland Mercury, or one of the alternative papers, about some of the goings on there.
Cool. See, it's so fascinating to me because, I mean, I've been here, you know, my whole life, and I've looked up, you know, most haunted locations here in Oregon. But I had no idea until I started talking with you, Steve. I mean, it just opened a whole new world of, you know, haunted locations and everything. And it's just been fascinating.
Oh, and the mausoleum, Portland's Wilhelm Memorial. And you probably passed that every day for years and didn't even know it was there, did you?
No, I had no idea until you told me about it. Did we miss the day that they let people in?
They didn't do it this year. Ugh. It's Memorial Day when they do it, but they didn't do it this year. Yeah, it's the largest mausoleum west of the Mississippi. Had the first crematorium west of the Mississippi, and I've got a video about it called Portland's City of the Dead, I think. And it's 8 floors on some levels. It's absolutely sprawling. The back of it that faces the wildlife preserve there, it's the highest outdoor mural in the United States. And there's something crazy, like 80,000 remains that are interred there, with room for another 20,000 more, I think. A lot of them are cremated, but there's a lot of bodies there too. Place is huge. I went, the last time I went on Memorial Day, according to my phone, I walked like 3.5 miles, and I still didn't see everything on every floor.
Goodness.
But it is amazing. There's just little twists and turns and room after room and little nooks and crannies. And they've seen ghosts there. There's a ghost cat, and then there's a figure of a man that they've seen, I think, near one of the marble staircases or something. But it's got an eerie feeling, especially in the children's areas. And you can see where, when there was other pandemics where it wiped out your whole families, it'd be mom, dad, and two or three kids all with the same date there, or close to. And then right behind there on the other side of the game preserve is where Oaks Amusement Park is. So there's certain places where you're like walking through this mausoleum and you can hear like carnival music coming through because it comes through the windows in the back there.
That would be, oh boy, that would make quite the video.
Yeah.
With that, that background adds, music. Oof.
That adds extra creepiness and gets too close to clowns for me.
And then Oaks Amusement Park itself, it's haunted. They've they see a little boy there running around like in clothes from the 50s or 60s or something. And then what's the island in the river just north of Portland? I can't think. Jansen Beach. There's an island up there. There used to be a big carousel up there that was haunted. And I read the most chilling story about that, where a woman was taking her son on there and he kept looking toward the middle. One of the panels was off and you could like see the inner workings of the merry-go-round. And he kept looking and he's like, "Mommy, I don't want to go under there." And she's like, "Well, no, you can ride here." And he keeps looking at it, keeps looking at it. He's like, "Mommy, there's kids under there." And it turned out a couple of kids had ventured in there when they weren't supposed to and were crushed to death by it. And it's, from what I understand, it's not there anymore. It's dismantled and it's in a warehouse somewhere.
Right.
But that's just creepy to me. Any kind of, there's a story in one of my books about a man that found a small carousel out in the woods in Tennessee. And no explanation how it got there or why, but I think later on he did find out that somewhere else it had been responsible for some injuries, maybe some deaths to kids. And whoever owned it just took it out in the woods and left it.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
That would be scary to come across a merry-go-round out in the woods.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Weeks. I saw one of the horses peering at him from the thicket, you know, what in the world? And then looked, and there's an entire merry-go-round in there. Small one.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't like that kind of thing, because then, unless it's actually where something had originally stood, I don't like the idea that somebody took the time to drag stuff out into the woods to just leave it.
That happens a lot, and it usually has something weird associated with it. There's another story I've got there where there was a ticket booth from a drive-in theater that somebody had drug off out into the woods, and there was a homeless guy living in it, and then he got killed, and then the kids that used to go back out there and hang out there with him, they would hear like somebody in there crying and stuff after he had died. They wouldn't go back in there. So yeah, anything that's moved from its original location, then it seems to attract spirits or something. I don't know. Don't have an answer for that one.
Right. It disturbs the area, and then it can become that attractant, I guess.
And same with a lot of houses when people go to renovate, even if they're restoring it to the original, it'll stir things up.
That's true. Yeah, I've heard stories on that. You know, and then there's also, I can't remember where I heard it, but there was a story about how a guy came across a really old, it was like an encampment, and you could see where they used to have this fire, and he decided to build a fire in this old fire pit. And after he did that, it was like he woke everything up in the area, and you could hear the voices and this chanting or this, you know, different, I don't know. And it was just chilling to think that you could, I don't know, activate a recording, basically a time in history that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've heard stories about that where somebody cut their finger and dripped some blood on something, and then it was just happened to be somewhere where there'd been rituals held before, and it livened things back up.
Goodness, wow. Oh, man. So
be careful where you cut your finger, I guess.
Yeah.
Or at least where the blood drips.
Right.
Noted. Yeah, I don't like... part of that reminds me of the whole idea of residual hauntings, that things just kind of play on a feedback loop. That I don't know, in theory they would be playing anyway, but maybe if you activated something and that just started the reel to just go over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And another cursed or haunted item here that came from Portland is the original Dybbuk box, the one that kind of started the whole thing. They found that here.
What?
I think it was like an antique shop or furniture store or something here in Portland. Kevin Mann bought it. It was like a little wine cabinet, but that's when he opened it up, that was the stuff all inside there that, that starred the original Dybbuk box. And Clyde Lewis has a show. It's a national show, but he's here in Portland. It's Ground Zero. And he's had Kevin on there a couple of times talking about all this stuff that happened. And I don't know if it was him or he'd sold it at one time, and then I think the person returned it, but somebody had given it as a gift to their aunt, and then she suddenly had like this just totally debilitating stroke. And they visited her in the hospital, and she was able to write out the words "hate gift" because she felt like there was something about the gift that had caused the stroke. And I know when Clyde Lewis had it in the studio there, all kinds of things, their whole system went haywire. It was in the summertime, I think. The air conditioner shut off, the heating came on, and they couldn't turn it off. And it got up to like in the 90s in the studio, and all kinds of electrical problems and problems interfering with the audio and stuff. It's creepy. Of course, Clyde's done some crazy things like that. He had a suit one time that belonged to John Wayne Gacy. And they did this at I think it's at the Doug Fir Bar. And another guy had built some kind of cabinet where they could send massive amounts of electricity through objects. So they put Gacy's suit in there. And they said it still had like chewing gum wrappers and toothpicks and things in the pockets. No. And they put it in this case and then supercharged it with all this energy. They were trying to get Gacy's ghost to manifest or something, but I don't think that was successful. But Clyde does some stuff that's just really out there on the fringe. But it makes for entertaining shows.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. That that reminded me that back in the day, I used to watch MTV Cribs, and Jonathan Davis from Korn, if I'm remembering correctly, would actually, or I would still, I would guess, collects stuff from serial killers. Yeah. Like I remember them going into his house, and he had. A Volkswagen Beetle where there had been murders, and I can't remember the serial killer that
Ted Bundy.
Oh, there you go. See,
Zach Bagans has it now, I think. I was taking a crime and criminology classes back in the late 80s, early 90s, and I wrote to some of those guys. I had a letter from Gacy, I had a letter from Manson, I had one from Tex Watson. And Gacy at the time was selling paintings, and I almost bought one of those skull clown paintings. He couldn't actually sell them because of the law that says you can't make money off your crimes. But he had an attorney or a friend in Mississippi that was selling them. And I could have bought it for like, I think it's like $100 or something, and I didn't do it. And they sold out, and then he wasn't able to get any more paints or do any more painting. And then after they executed him, those paintings shot up. It's probably worth several thousand dollars today. But I, like I said, I almost pulled the trigger on it, but then I was just like, I really want that in my house, something that that he's touched and that he's, you know, put his, by essence. Creating that art, you don't know what kind of residual energy might be with that. So I passed on that one.
Do you have the letters still?
Wow. No, I loaned them to a friend of mine. She was taking some of the same classes I had. And I had them framed and things, and she took them to, like, the next year to a display for her class, and I never got them back.
Well, that sucks.
Oh, man. I can't imagine, like, yeah, if you could have, like, read them on air, that would have been...
Yeah. Gacy's was just, you know, de rigueur. And same with Tex Watson. Tex was talking about, he has a prison ministry called Abounding Love Ministries, and he was talking a lot about that. But the letter from Manson, it was just, it was pure Charlie. I mean, he was talking about, I'd mentioned something about computers, that I was running a BBS at the time, and I was doing a lot of true crime stuff on there. And he's like, yeah, man, that's where I'm at. I'm a zero with a slash through it. Everything's one or zero, black, white, good, bad. And it was just this total Charlie rant on the letter. I'm like, man, this is awesome.
Whoa.
And he'd signed it Easy Manson, and it had a little swastika on it. But, and you know, that little synchronicity, this is August the 8th. This is the night of the Helter Skelter. This was the, what, the 51st anniversary, I think, of the Helter Skelter murders. They, it was either last night and tonight or tonight and tomorrow night. Sharon Tate and those nope. people were killed on one night, and then the next night was Lino and Rosemary LaBianca.
Mm-mm. No. Nope. I, what? I don't know why.
Oh, boy.
And then,
meaning I'm wrong, or?
No, as in, we don't need to. No, I don't think you're wrong. I don't question you.
Oh, pile of nope there.
It's the, I thought you were like, nope.
What? August 9th? Nope.
No, it was more like, I don't know how we got, I mean, I guess it's all connected, but we didn't start the night out talking about serial killers, and here we are.
It's August 8th and 9th. So tonight was the night, and actually about this time, Sharon Tate and her friends would have been having dinner at the El Coyote restaurant on it's on Fairfax. I've been there. I was actually there on August the 8th once and sat at the table that they dined at. That, they call it the Last Supper. That was where they dined before they were murdered. But yeah, that's a busy place tonight. It was hard to get that table. I had to share it with a bunch of strangers, but it was the table, so... Yeah, I like some weird stuff. But Scott Michaels, my friend out there, he did the Dearly Departed tour. I think he still does those. He had the, like a murder memorabilia museum out there too. But if he's still doing them and you have the chance to take that Dearly Departed tour, it is amazing. He takes y'all around Hollywood. They drive you around. Used to be in a hearse. I think they've got like a 15-passenger van or something now. But they take you to the sites of all these famous deaths and murders and other strange things that have happened in Hollywood. And he has a specific tour of just the Manson sites. They take you out to Spawn Ranch there in Chatsworth and some of the other places. There's a burger joint up north. I can't remember the name of it, where they would take you. And Charlie used to sit outside there and eat a drink of Coke or eat French fries or something and wait for Squeaky Fromm to finish, or no, Susan Atkins to finish her shift at the strip club across the street. So it's, but the Manson stuff still, it's, I mean, for something that happened so long ago, it still gets so much press and you hear people talking about it. And it's just one of those cases that really touched a nerve and stuck. And, you know, they had that recent movie from Quentin Tarantino that kind of made things end a little differently than they actually did. But it's just, it's one of those things people never stop talking about. And I remember when I was a kid, I remember when it happened. But then when things really kicked off was when the trial started, when I think was in 71 or 72. And that was the news every night, you know, today in the Manson trial. Because at that time, that was the longest and most expensive trial in the country. And, you know, here was the boogeyman on TV. And he was one of those people. I think he was a shapeshifter. Because if you look at some of the different pictures of Manson, he would physically, like, alter his appearance. He would look so different from picture to picture to picture. I mean, you could still tell it was him. But it just, I don't know, there's something about him. He had that evil, charismatic quality, you know, like Hitler or like Jim Jones or...
Right.
People before and after, but
I just
so happy Helter Skelter, ladies.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Steve.
Oh, goodness.
Thanks.
Well, and this is the awesome. First time Caravan has ever dipped its toes in true crime, I believe.
That's another one of my fortes. I wrote for a lot of true crime magazines and things back in the late 80s and early 90s. I've covered some cases that would make your toes curl. And I mean, go and sit in court, like Kentucky Vampire Murders and the Papa Smurf Murders, really? The Rocky Top Murders, those, and that's just around the East Tennessee area.
Wow. You said Kentucky Vampire Murders?
Yeah, that was Natasha Cornett and her friends that they're also known as the Lily Lid Murders. They were family of, I think they were Jehovah's Witness, and these other kids were from Pikeville, Kentucky. So if you've watched Hellier, you know that Pikeville is a center of some strange goings on. In fact, the hotel that the Newkirks and the other guys stayed at there in Pikeville is the same hotel that Natasha and her friends stayed at, like back in the 80s and the 90s. They would go there on the weekends and have parties and drink each other's blood And they tried to burn 666 into the carpet one time and got kicked out. Same hotel. And they're sitting in there in hell, you're doing a tarot reading. And that's one of the other things that, this group of people did. And I think really it was probably just disenfranchised kids, you know. There's,
yeah.
I mean, Pikeville, Kentucky, it's Appalachia. It's hardcore Appalachia. And these were goth kids in the 80s and 90s. So you're going to be really out of place there.
Right.
And they just kind of kept to themselves. But somehow they ended up murdering a family of Jehovah's Witnesses that were trying to witness to them in a rest stop. And the little boy survived. He's a grown man now, but it was horrible. I mean, they shot him and ran over him with a car. And
oh my gosh.
But there's been some dispute as to who did what, but all involved are still in prison as we speak. I know, can't think of the other girl's name, but she was trying to get an appeal saying that she just went along with the rest of them.
What year was this?
Oh, man.
I want to say like 87. Let me take a look here. See, I went and sat in court for that one. It was fascinating. Mm. But that was the whole angle that the prosecutors and the district attorney played up, was the whole, oh, they're Satanists, they're Gothic, they wear black and listen to heavy metal.
Well, sure. Height of the satanic panic then, if it's in the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, I'm looking it up. That's later than I thought, 1997.
Oh, wow. Okay, so.
Goodness. April 6, 1997. For some reason, I was thinking it was like the late 80s. But yeah, that was one of the famous cases around that area. It got a lot of press. It's kind of like, if you ever heard of the West Memphis Three, it was very similar to that, where there was somebody, and to this day, they don't know who did that, murdered some little boys in the woods. Mm-hmm. And they blamed it on these metal and goth kids and the one guy, the name Damien or something like that, a creepy name anyway. He was like the leader of this little cult, you know, and he had the satanic Bible and all this stuff. And they just kind of pinned it on them because they were the outcasts in their little town there in West Memphis, Arkansas. But they were eventually, there's a lot of celebrities got behind that and got mm-hmm. them released. But again, it still doesn't solve who murdered the little boys.
Right. That's so sad.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've gone down some dark rabbit holes.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things you have to take a break and push yourself away from it sometimes, particularly with the serial killers and stuff like that, because when, like Nietzsche said, when you peer into the abyss peers into you, and it can draw you in. And I think it's the same with anything evil, all the black magic and stuff like that. You have to keep a safe distance and keep your guard up, or you can get pulled way over into some stuff that being over your head before you know it. So, yeah, I took a break for a long time. Didn't even read any true crime books or anything. But, yeah, I wrote a lot of articles. T.E.D. Klein, who was he's a horror and sci-fi author, he was publishing a magazine at the time called Crime Beat. And there was just a real resurgence of true crime there. Because prior to that, it had been, you know, like these lurid detective magazines and things like you would see at the grocery store, the dime store and things. But then they kind of legitimized true crime, and it became like almost a fad or a fashionable thing to follow.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it still is to a degree.
Oh, yeah. I don't know, I think it was 4 years ago, I went to a conference over in Oxford, and the topic of the conference was evil women and evil. And one of the, it was lots of fun, so much fun. So I got to present over there, and one of my fellow presenters is from New England area, I believe. And she does, if I'm not mistaken, psychological profiles of people. And her area of study are female serial killers, female murderers. And she said the same thing about, you have to, especially when she gets really into a case, you know, you have to take a break every once in a while, or, you know, see it through, and then you've got to step away.
Yeah.
Because it just gets overwhelming.
Yeah. No, Justin, over on Mysterious Circumstances, Man, he, it's all, you know, true crime and some of the episodes that he does, and he gets so in depth, and I can listen to some of the episodes and stuff, but then it's just like, man, you know, and he just pumps them out, and he does, like I said, phenomenal research, and it's just like,
yeah,
wow, how can
there's,
you?
There's a couple of guys on YouTube like that. Dark and Grim is one, and a guy calls himself Deadbug. And they have some of the most amazing true crime stuff that I've ever seen. And I don't know what their sources are, but they have like crime scene photos and stuff that people aren't supposed to have. And oh, that's boy. That's one of those I can only watch so much. I'm kind of like, you know,
yeah.
Watch kitten videos or something for a while. That's,
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely do that whenever when things have been too stressful. I absolutely look at kitten videos. So I'm with you on that one.
Pamela Smart, do you remember that one? It was a New Hampshire case where she was a school teacher, and that was the way they built the case. The murderous, sexy school teacher. She'd had an affair with like one of her 15-year-old students and then tried to convince the kid, or maybe did convince him. I don't remember now. A lot of this is lost in the midst of time. But anyway, her husband ended up murdered, and I think they charged her with conspiracy to commit murder or something like that.
Wow.
And the kid was in on it, but I had letters from her. She sent perfumed letters from prison because I'd open my P.O. box because I would dare not give anybody, any of these people, my physical address. I'd open my P.O. box and there was just the scent would come pouring out of like, oh, Pammy sent another letter. That was what she went by. It was Pammy. Who else? Robert Bardo. Do you remember Rebecca Schaefer, who was on My Sister Sam?
No.
Robert Bardo was this crazy guy. I think he was originally from Tennessee, but he had moved around, was kind of a drifter. Well, he developed a crush on this girl, Rebecca Schaefer, who was on a TV show with Pam Dawber called My Sister Sam. And he actually hired a private detective to find her address. And he showed up at her apartment in Hollywood. And I think he gave her some flowers, a box of candy or something. And she just kind of blew him off, you know, like, don't come here. So he leaves, comes back and says, oh, I forgot to give you this. And then shoots her to death in the doorway. And then he fled. And his sister, who still lived in Kingsport, was the one that turned him in, and how they found him. And I corresponded with him for a while. He was way out there. He's still in prison, thank goodness. And then Danny Rollins, the Gainesville Ripper. I don't know if you ever heard of that case. He sliced and diced a bunch of people on the campus of, I think that's U of Florida, that's there in Gainesville, and rearranged their body parts and things like that. Like,
oh my gosh.
So, yeah, it's like I said, it was just one of those things where it's fascinating, but it's like, you know, looking at a dead bug or something, you know, or a squashed mouse, you poke it with a stick, but then. After a while, it's like, yeah, I don't need to do this anymore.
No, I hear you. You know, I was in search and rescue for a while, as you know, and I was looking into, you know, becoming a police person, and we ended up doing the postmortem classes, and I was done.
Yeah.
I took the postmortem classes, and then I decided, you know what? It's not for me.
I took some stuff like that in some of the forensics classes. And Dr. William Bass, Bill Bass, has the infamous body farm at UT Knoxville.
Where they've got, I've heard of that.
People that have donated their bodies to science. Mm-hmm. They've got a plot of land out behind UT Hospital, which it's a teaching hospital there. It's part of the university. And they've got bodies like in shallow graves. They've got bodies in refrigerators and in the trunks of old cars and things. And then they study through predation and the type of insects and how far along the insects are developed, you know, from to larva or whatever, how long a body's been there. And they've actually used that research. Now they can a lot more accurately tell how long a body's been there when they find one through that. But it's a horror. It's a nightmare. And I remember the day that we went, they passed around a jar of Vicks, and you take a big wad of it and wipe it across your upper lip. But still,
right,
you smell that stench of death. Yeah, you just, it's, it's in your nose and just, it smells like Vicks and death. It's the only thing the Vicks helped with. Mm. But yeah, I took a few classes like that and I sat in on an autopsy and just, no. I don't see how people do it. I think you have to, you would have to have some great degree of detachment.
Yeah.
Your autopsy, particularly a child or something like that. And, I don't see how funeral directors and a girl that I dated back in the 80s now owns a funeral home and she's a funeral director. And I'm just like, no. I mean, I like creepy up to the grave, but if it was bones, I'd probably be okay with that.
That's different. Oof.
I was showing Heather some stuff today, an Etsy shop that I found that has all these taxidermied animals and preserved bugs and beetles and stuff. Now, that I like. It's under glass. You know, it can't get to me. So.
Right. Yeah. My uncle just called me earlier today and mentioned a place. I have to look into the history of it, but he thinks that it's an old funeral home, since we were talking about funeral homes. And that some odd things have been happening there. I think it's an abandoned house, right? Or an abandoned building right now.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the older funeral homes were just homes. And anyway.
Funeral parlor comes from.
Yeah.
When that became the thing, then you had the living room at home instead of laying them out at home, which they used to do. They used to lay people out in the parlor in their homes.
Right. Didn't they come up with the term living room to try to step away from,
to get away from the whole funeral parlor connection there?
Yeah. So that's the next thing I want to try to dive into in the history of the area where I grew up, to see if there's something somewhere about, because as long as I've been aware, there was never a funeral home there. But if so, I want to go check it out.
There's one just outside of Selwood neighborhood here in the Milwaukee, or no, what's the other? Can't think of the other. It's on Milwaukee Avenue. With, I can't remember. Do you know the name of that neighborhood, Ann, that adjoins Selwood there?
No.
I can't think of the name. It's like where QVC and all that is. Well, just up from that, there's an old funeral home. And when I first moved out here, it was a nightclub called The Woods. And it was awesome because they had all these creepy bands there and stuff. And now it's like a pizza joint or something. And I was going to go there with a friend of mine, and then she changed her mind. She's like, I don't want to eat somewhere where they used to embalm people. Like, oh, it hadn't been a funeral home in a long time. She's like, I don't care. I'm not going to eat in a funeral home.
Well, I mean, I don't blame her.
Westmoreland is what I was trying to think of. Selwood, and then the next little area is Westmoreland, and they kind of run together in that little area there just before the Brooklyn neighborhood. So, but that it was cool when it was a club, though, because it still looked like a funeral home. It had all these long couches and stuff. And I had one of those when I was in college. A friend of mine had driven by a place, funeral home, and they had an old couch sitting outside. He's like, the funeral home's throwing their couch away. Let's go get it and put it in their dorm. And it was a couch. It was like 15 feet long. It was the biggest couch I've ever seen. My uncle just happened to have a flatbed truck. And I called him, and he came and got it and took it to our dorm. So we had this marvelous leather couch out of the funeral home. But like four people could pass out on it and not touch each other. You know, it was that long.
Nice. Oof. That works well for a dorm. Then.
Yeah.
It did. It was perfect. It took up one whole wall. And then, you know, it's a conversation piece too. Wow, where'd you get this guy? It came out of a funeral home, man.
Yeah. What? No way.
Oh, man. That's great.
Have you ever wondered about that, though? Why would you haunt a funeral home or even haunt a graveyard? I mean, you're already dead when they took you there in either place. But then maybe that's because that's where the rest of your body is, or that's weird. Because I would understand going back to a place you enjoyed or going back to a place you hated and haunting somebody, you know, if you're malevolent. But why a funeral home? Why, you know, do they see ghosts at the shopping mall or at haunting the craft store? Or,
I wonder.
Maybe it happens. You know, you just, you don't hear. There was in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, when I lived there, the Kmart was haunted. They would see a guy in there moving around after dark, after it was closed, and it set off the alarms and the motion detectors and stuff. And then out at the plants out there, It's part of Oak Ridge National Laboratory. It's where the atomic bomb was developed, at Manhattan Project and all that. There was X-10, which was a national laboratory, Y-12, which was weapons facility, and K-25, which was the uranium enrichment plant. And one time at K-25, there was a guard. I don't think he got fired, but I think he got reprimanded and probably sent home for a few days. He saw somebody in a place where they weren't supposed to be at night. He was working midnight shift, and they wouldn't do what he was telling them to do. So he ends up drawing his weapon. They still won't listen to him, and he actually popped off a couple of shots, and whatever he shot just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And they think it was somebody that used to work there and had come back.
Yeah. So that reminds me, just earlier today, I'm finishing up a post for Shannon for Into the Fray, the Weird Writer blog. And one of the articles that I came across is from the late 1800s about a ghost that was seen outside the Vulcan Ironworks in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty certain that this will all be covered in the post, but they were pretty certain that it was someone who died recently, a well-known person in the area who had died just like 2 weeks prior. But the first sightings, it was a similar thing. The guard saw someone there that shouldn't have been there and tried to speak to them, and they wouldn't respond. And so the guard approached them. And as the guard approached, the apparition would back away. So, you know, as soon as you'd get closer, it would back up. And there is a line in there that they shot at it and it just dissipated. I think the way the journalist wrote it was like a cloud just, or a mist. Wow. Just dissipated. And then it would reappear though, like behind him. Yeah. It was taunting.
There was another place there in Oak Ridge. And I actually talked to the guy. I think I've got this story in one of my books. The company was called QSEP, and that stood for Quantum Separator. And they had a facility there that burned commingled low-level radioactive waste. And the incinerator actually burned so hot that it burned the smoke and the ash and everything. And I know that doesn't make any sense, but that was their claim. So there was nothing escaping. Mm-hmm. And he talked about, he would say things like the, when they have the deer hunts over there, they check all those deer for radiation and some of it leaches out, and people would take deer that were so hot they couldn't keep them. They would take them there and burn them. And then also at the hospital, that was where they got rid of their body parts from amputation. So he's like, you know, go down to the incinerator and there's like a trolley cart full of, you know, amputated limbs and stuff in there to go in there. But what happened to him, that whole area, it's called Bear Creek Valley. And it was before the government took that land. It was all like farms and stuff down in there in that area. And he was a guard at the QSEP facility, and he was working midnights. And one night he was out, I think he'd gone out to smoke or something. And near the back of one of the buildings, there's a little containment pond there that has radioactive water in it, and had like a high chain link fence with razor wire and stuff around it. Well, he goes out there, and there's a guy standing out in it, and said it didn't occur to him at first, but the guy was wearing like, he said, old-timey clothes, like, you know, a big black hat with a brim and a black jacket. And so he looked kind of like the preacher from the second Poltergeist movie. Mm-hmm. And so I yelled at him, like, hey, you're not supposed to be in there. You know, get out of there. That's hot, meaning it was radioactive. And this person, he turned around and waved and then dissipated. And the guy quit. He never went back. He went right then and clocked out and never went back. He's like, okay, I can find another guard job. He said, but that scared the you know what out of me.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was a radioactive ghost, I guess, since it was standing in the containment pond.
Yeah. Well, maybe something happened there before all of that, and that's just an older. Yeah,
it had been a farm at one time, and it was probably the old farmer. Like, what's all this stuff here on my land? You know, where'd this pond come from, and why is it green?
Right. And he had good manners, which is why he waved.
He waved, and then
That's what you do out in the country anyway. Whenever you pass by somebody, and even in small towns, you wave at them.
You nod your head, and you have the
yep.
You have your that head. Appalachian wave in the area. It's just kind of a kind of a crook of the neck, kind of tilt head to the side. That's a handless wave.
Yep, exactly. That's all that was. That's what he was doing. Yeah, I hear you.
But that's, they call it in the South. It's did you see so-and-so? Yeah, he threw his head back at me. Yeah, that sounds good, but that just means he said hello without using his hands.
Mm-hmm.
In the Philippines, they point with their lips. That was interesting. So, where's so-and-so? And they would like point with their lips to one side. In that culture, considered rude to use your finger. You can't point with your finger.
Interesting.
And if to call somebody, you don't wiggle your finger at them like you do here, that's very insulting. You palm down and move your hand up and down. That means come here. And you don't ever whistle at anybody, because that's what you call a dog. You don't whistle, get anybody's attention there. That'll start a fight. You learn these little things quickly when you go to other countries.
Yeah.
Let me think. I feel like there was another thing that I wanted to ask you about, Steve. But what I did, I texted Jen, Steve, and told her that I thought I heard something when you were talking about the Furbies.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I heard like a Furby-type sound coming through the speakers.
Your Furby.
Yeah, I mean, it might, I don't know. She's like, we'll hear it on playback if something.
Well, I'm telling you, man.
EVP from the last time. What was that?
I don't know.
Like another language. And then when I put it into, phonetically set it into Google Translate, it said it was Arabic for do not say it.
Right. And that was when we were talking about Sasha.
Yeah, you said that something about the doll being haunted, and it was telling you don't say the doll's haunted.
Yeah. Okay. So Sasha,
You're just giving it energy. It's really
right. Yeah. Right. I know. So I don't have an issue with the doll. I don't have an issue with Sasha at all. My youngest that picked her out will tell me that she says things or whatever. And when I was doing one of the weird writer posts for Shannon, I talked about haunted dolls. And of course, I mentioned Sasha, and my daughter came out, saw me typing. I think I footnoted this as well in the blog post, but she came out while I was typing and she said, what are you writing about, Mom? And I said, well, you know, dolls. And she said, you're not talking about Sasha, are you? And I was like, well, yeah, of course I'm talking about Sasha. She
like it when you talk about
her. Yeah. She said, what she told me then, she said, you need to read this whole thing to me that you wrote. And I'll let you know if Sasha says that's okay. Because, because she doesn't want to, she doesn't want people to be afraid of her. So you need to read it to me and I'll let you know if she says it's okay. I was like, all right, awesome.
Wow.
So,
Very interesting. Yeah.
Well, the youngest also, when we were talking about cemeteries earlier, she told me once, and this was a few years ago, that she didn't want to go to, because I always love to go to cemeteries just to look at the stones, especially the old ones. And she told me one time she didn't want to go to the cemeteries or the one cemetery in town here for a while. She wanted to take a break. And I said, why? And she said, well, I'm tired of seeing all the people. And I'm like, what people? Because we're always the only ones there. We're usually the only ones there. And she said that there were all kinds of people that were just randomly standing around, and some of them looked sad. Some of them looked angry. And then there was a line of them. There's always a line of them, she'd say, that would step through something and just disappear. She said it was like a doorway and they would just stand in line to step through and they just disappear. But she was tired of seeing that every time she went. I'm like, oh, okay.
That's really incredible. I mean, wow.
Right.
Wow.
Oh, I have all my, we're going to do a Patreon episode about Mansfield when I went to go ghost hunting there. But
yes,
I should, what I'm going to have to start doing is keeping the EMF meter out here while we're recording apparently and see when it jumps.
Oh,
because
good idea.
What happened in the prison was we'd have the spirit box on. And so whoever was listening to the spirit box, the volume would be up. And we'd have headphones on. You wouldn't be able to hear other things that were going on in the room, of course. And when someone would hear something and then repeat it, when they would repeat it, the EMF meter would jump. This was almost without fail every time. So That was interesting. I'll start bringing the EMF meter for our caravan recordings.
Yeah, you'll have to. That's for sure. I mean, see, that was one of my biggest things before when I would record. I can edit and it's totally fine and I don't mind editing, but I am going to be honest, and I think I've said it before, I am afraid to edit these episodes because I really have no idea what I will hear back. And that's the way that I've always felt since the beginning.
That's why I don't do EMF recordings at home. If there's something here, I don't want to know because I don't live here.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is with those EMF.
I meant EVP recordings, not EMF. Edit.
Yeah. Well, the amazing thing is that I have the EMF meter and I'll walk around the house here every once in a while. And the kids, of course, they like to, just for fun, hey, something happened, let me see the EMF meter, and they'll go walk around the house.
That's so cool.
but they, that doesn't, it doesn't jump here at the house. I mean, if you take it next to the microwave or the TV or your cell phone, it will move. But it's not just randomly moving ever in the house. Okay, maybe once. But other than that, it hasn't done it. But at the prison, constantly stuff was going off.
Yeah, now, see, that's a place I would agree that would be haunted. There's, you know, a lot of pain, a lot of misery there. People died there. People didn't want to be there and hated being there. That I can see being haunted. A prison or a hospital or an insane asylum or some of the tuberculosis facilities and things like that, the TB asylums. All those, I think, are haunted. I don't think I've ever been in or near one that wasn't haunted to one degree or another.
Right. Yeah, there's just down the road from where we are, there's an old hospital it was built to be a tuberculosis hospital. It was shut down a good while ago, and they have a big fence around it, and people watch it. You can't get in. I mean, you can, but the odds of you getting caught and having issues then are pretty high because they do watch it very closely. But it supposedly has a lot of spirits as well. But I mean, there would have been a lot of deaths, so that makes sense.
Wow. Yeah.
There's an old asylum, an insane asylum there in East Tennessee called Eastern State. It's in Knoxville. And that one is very haunted. And I think it's finally, they've decommissioned all the buildings now, but there for a while, part of the buildings were abandoned and part of them had people in them. And I used to date a girl who was a psychiatric nurse over there, and she told all kinds of freaky stories about seeing lights in places that didn't have any power and people hearing things. And they used to see a guy on a bicycle that didn't exist that would come tearing through the middle of this like estate that it was on.
Wow.
But it had been there since, I want to say, like in the 1800s. So it was one of the first places that they did a successful lobotomy. So if you think about that, the first successful one, how many unsuccessful ones did they do? Where they absolutely scrambled people's brains or killed them. So that's,
that was a
creepy place.
Fantastic preseason finale.
Yes, absolutely. Covered a lot of bases here.
I love it. A little bit of whiplash for the listeners. Hey, this topic, that one, this one.
Yep. And then the next season will be, why, we'll never allow Steve Stockton back on again. Steve Stockton gone wild.
Those are the Patreon episodes.
It's a whole video, and I'm not wearing pants.
Well,
I'll just hang up on
you. I meant, thanks for listening to the video, guys.
Didn't have anything nice to say, so I'm just going to.
No, I didn't mean that. Bye.
Well, right.
Bye.
Bye. Yep.
Fire, burn on, deflame, burn on. The You grow heavy, then you fall so heavy, then you fall to the ground. I lay in a pile of my broken plans. They turn red and then they fall, so red and then they fall to the ground.
Flame.